This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 252.
This podcast is brought to you by Pitney Bowes. No matter what your small office needs or sends, Pitney Bowes SendPro C200 has you covered. The C200 lets you send mail and packages right from your desk. Plus, you can save 3 cents a letter and up to 39% off retail shipping rates. So start saving today and get a free 60-day trial of a Pitney Bowes C200. Just visit online at pb.com/MTA. Once again, that's pb.com/MTA.
This episode is also brought to you by Honest. With great tasting, healthy USDA organic beverages, Honest offers both a refreshingly transparent product and outlook. And now, to help you refuel after a tough workout, there's Honest Sport. Made with less calories and sugar and sea salt for electrolytes, Honest Sport is the perfect everyday fitness drink. This is what you've been waiting for. Visit honesttea.com/podcast today. Honest Tea. Live actively, replenish organically.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where we empower you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we talk with coach and fellow podcaster Jason Fitzgerald about the wrong and right ways to do strength training when preparing for a marathon. And in this episode's quick tip, we'll share recommendations on sunglasses for runners. And of course, if you want to go deeper in your training and get expert help, you can learn about Academy membership when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. So if the audio sounds a little bit different, folks, it's because we are in our camper on the road. We're actually traveling out west. Our summer is full of travel plans.
Yes, we've been on the road for 9 days now at the time of this recording. So, go us.
Yes, all five of us have been staying in a travel trailer that we've been towing behind our Suburban. So, it's been a lot of fun. We'll give you guys a quick travel update. We're calling this Angie and Trev's Most Excellent Summer Adventure. So, we drove across Pennsylvania and Ohio. Of course, we're from Pennsylvania, and we then drove up through Michigan, through the Upper Peninsula, something I've always wanted to do. We stayed the night in St. Ignace and took a ferry out to Mackinac Island and did a family bike ride around the island. We rented bikes, and it's 8 miles around the island. It was a lot of fun. The instant that we got on our bikes and started pedaling, we all had smiles just plastered across our faces.
That's right. And it helps that it's this Victorian town on an island where there are no cars allowed. They haven't been allowed since 1898. So, you know, as a mother, when your kids are on bikes, you kind of have this sense of worry.
Yeah.
And it's decreased quite a bit when there's no cars around. So
I was still looking for cars. It's like hard to get out of my system.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a beautiful ride, just enjoying the water and just beautiful sunny day. Could stop and take pictures and let the kids rest when they needed to.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go to Mackinac Island. I've heard about it. And that night we stayed on the shores of Lake Huron. And I've never seen so many mosquitoes, but it's all good.
Summertime in the north.
Yes, in the Great Lakes region. The next day, we actually saw 3 Great Lakes in one day as we drove across the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and then into Wisconsin. We saw Lake Huron, Lake Michigan, and Lake Superior in the same day.
Yeah, it was a beautiful drive.
So beautiful. So awesome. It's very remote. There's not much up there. Just rugged country. And if you haven't seen the Great Lakes, you know, maybe for our listeners outside the U.S. who haven't visited the U.S., they're massive. I mean, our kids are like, is that the ocean? So we had a great time at the Grandma's Marathon in Duluth, a marathon that Angie ran for her Minnesota race and marathon number 53. And of course, we'll have a race recap about that coming out on our next episode. We just need some time to get it ready. So you can be looking forward to that. We also met a lot of awesome fans of the podcast. We had a meetup. We'll tell you about that on the next episode. Angie's probably still sore from the race.
I actually feel good today. I feel like I could go out and run again. So perfect. Progress is being made.
And then after the race, we drove down to the Twin Cities, St. Paul and Minneapolis, and we took our kids to the Mall of America. which is this massive mall with roller coasters inside and everything. Always wanted to see it.
A massive soul-sucking place for people like myself who don't like to shop.
Angie doesn't like malls. But anyway, she sat on the bench and watched people while I took our kids on the expensive roller coasters. And then we spent the last 2 days driving across Minnesota and North Dakota, and we are now currently on the edge of the Teddy Roosevelt National Park, which we'll be driving through tomorrow at the time of this recording, and hopefully getting in a good hike. Love this North Dakota sunshine.
Yeah, it's beautiful here.
Minnesota wasn't too nice to us. Like, rain. I'm talking like deluge. You know, the windows of heaven were opened upon us, flooded us the whole time we were there.
Yes.
So that's what's going on a little bit with us on the road here. We've got a great interview for you guys today. We're going to talk about strength training, a very important topic for long-distance runners. Before we get into that, Angie's got some shout-outs that she wants to give. So let's go ahead and jump into that, Angie.
We'd like to say congratulations to Jarrell in the Academy. He recently set a PR at the Drop 13 Half Marathon in Utah.
Did he drop 13 minutes off his time?
I don't know exactly, but I think it must be one of those downhill races, which Utah is so famous for. So it sounds like a great event. Also, congratulations to Mark, a longtime Academy member, who just posted in the group. He said, "By some miracle, I got a PR at a 5K this weekend, and by another miracle, I won my age group. I'm not fast by any stretch, but I got it done, and I did it while listening to the MTA podcast the whole way. I'm very excited. Thanks, all." Also, congratulations to my coaching client, Elliot. He said, "I had a great race at the Monterey Spartan Super this weekend. I took 25 minutes off my time from last year and placed in the top third of the competitive age group division. I felt much stronger this year than last year, and I'm pleased with my progress." We'd also like to say congratulations to Jeanne in the Academy. She says, "I just ran my first half, which was the Covered Bridges Half Marathon in Vermont. It was a pretty course, and the weather was perfect. It's such a great race that it sold out in less than 10 minutes. I did not train for this like I wanted, so I really just focused on finishing and enjoying the experience. My first marathon will be the Wineglass Marathon in September, and I'm really looking forward to that."
Well, congrats on your first half marathon. That's awesome. And the Covered Bridges Half Marathon in Vermont, that's one that I have not heard of. But the fact that it sold out in less than 10 minutes, it must be extremely popular and extremely special to a lot of people.
Well, it's really hard to find anything that's not beautiful in the state of Vermont. So I can imagine it's a pretty nice course. And this final shout out goes to Ed in the Academy. He said, "I had a great time in Dawson City, Yukon, and was excited to shave approximately 8 minutes off my half marathon time. I was very happy considering I've been dealing with a knee injury. After the race, I received an award I never expected called the Most Enthusiastic Runner. I know I'm not a fast runner or even an average runner, but I love running and being part of the running community and encouraging others to get out there. Thanks to my MTA crew for all the motivation."
All right. I love it. Thanks for sharing that, Ed. That comes from Icebeard Ed.
Which this time of the year, probably there's no ice in his beard, but.
I don't know. He's up there in the Yukon. Yeah, I know. And actually, we're going to be driving through the Yukon on our way to Alaska. We're looking forward to being in Canada, going up through British Columbia and the Yukon Territory, and possibly on the way back going through Alberta. Who knows? Our exact route hasn't been nailed down, but I know we have a lot of listeners in Canada. We'll be thinking about you guys as we go through. Kilometer after kilometer of driving, we'll be thinking, why is this country so big?
That's right. We love our Canadian listeners.
Well, congrats to all of you out there taking action in your health and fitness. Angie's always said that core training and strength training is a vital part of getting to the marathon starting line strong. So we're excited to dive deep into the topic of strength training today with our special guest, Jason Fitzgerald. He's the founder of strengthrunning.com and host of the Strength Running Podcast. We were actually just on his podcast. He interviewed us about marathon training for beginners. So you can check that out if you're interested. Jason ran competitively in college, and he's a USATF certified coach. He lives with his family in Colorado. And in this interview, you're going to hear the compelling case for why you should do strength training, common mistakes that people make, and of course, how you can do it the right way. Jason really knows his stuff, and I know you guys are going to get a lot out of this episode, and hopefully it'll be a huge help to you. So let's go ahead and get into our interview with Jason Fitzgerald right now. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Now that I'm well on my way, well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. All right, we're on the podcast now with Jason Fitzgerald, fellow podcaster, joining us via Skype from Colorado, right, Jason?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks so much for having me on.
You know, it's great to get together with a fellow podcaster because, for one thing, the audio issues are not as bad. You guys usually have good microphones to record with, which is cool.
Yeah, I think we might actually have similar mics right now.
So take us back to the beginning. How'd you get into this crazy thing called long distance running?
Oh, man, what a story. I actually hated running up until I became a runner, which was kind of a weird story. I went out for the high school cross country team when I was a freshman because I thought it was like track and field and I could just show up and start high jumping. And I got there and very quickly learned that there are zero field events whatsoever in cross country. And all we did every day was just run long distances.
It's miserable, isn't it?
I didn't know what to do. My first run was 3 miles. I couldn't finish. I felt like I had been run over by a truck afterward. And so it was the start to something that, you know, I've fallen in love with over the years. I'm really glad that I liked the guys on the team. My coach was really fantastic. We had so much fun. You know, within a week, I was pretty much hooked on the sport of running. And I ended up running cross country, indoor track, outdoor track, all 4 years in high school and then again in college. Haven't stopped. So I pretty much got the running bug early, and it was an about face because, you know, I was the, you know, 110-pound middle schooler during track and field week throwing a shot put because I wanted to stay as far away from all the running events as possible. And, yeah, you know, now I've run marathons and, you know, run 90 miles a week and all these crazy things. So certainly done an about face.
So it's like being thrown into the deep end that first day, probably, and like sink or swim, you know?
Yeah, I almost sunk, but I'm glad I'm still here.
So how many marathons have you done?
I have done 4 marathons since I started marathoning. I like to think of marathons as like Elmer's glue, a dab will do you. You know, there's I like to do them and really focus on them for like a whole year. But, you know, Angie, I know you've done like 50 something marathons, haven't you? You've done literally more than 10 times as many as I have.
Well, I think you're probably a little more concerned with quality rather than quantity. So definitely, you know, a little bit different approach, but it's all good. Do you have a favorite race distance that you tend to do more than others?
Oh, that's a great question. I think if I were to look back on all the different races that I've run, you know, I've raced everything from the 200 meters on up to an attempt at the 50K. I didn't actually finish that ultra. And also anything from sprint triathlons to duathlons. I ran the steeplechase in college, which was pretty awesome and crazy. But, you know, I would have to say that, you know, when it comes to a track race, it would have to be either the mile because it's such a pure, great, speed-oriented type of race. Or the steeplechase because it's just so insane. You know, it's 3 foot high barriers 5 times around the track for 3,000 meters. And they're not hurdles. You know, if you hit one of those, you are going down, not one of those barriers. So I think those are my favorite track races. But then when it comes to the road races, I really like 10 miles and the half marathon. I think they're such a great combination of endurance and speed. And, you know, they're just long enough to be really great distance events, but they're just short enough where you can actually try to run them really fast. So that's an interesting proposition for me. And, you know, I love helping runners with those distances too, just because I have such an interest in them.
The steeplechase looks like it was invented by a sadomasochist. How do you keep from just racking yourself when you go over that metal bar?
Well, I'll tell you, the first steeple I ever ran, you actually skip the first 2 hurdles. So the first one comes after about a minute or so of running, and I had just kind of forgotten about it. You know, you're in this big pack, you're kind of jostling, you're trying not to get clipped or anything like that. And all of a sudden, you know, in my front vision, I see guys in front of me jump. And I'm like, what is going on? What are they doing up there? And then, oh my God, I almost ran right into this like 80-pound barrier on the track. But originally it was a horse race. I believe the steeplechase was something that you competed in on a horse. And then some crazy person had the idea of, you know, let's just actually run over these obstacles and the water pit. And here we are. It's an Olympic event.
So, and you're a really fast guy. What's your marathon PR?
Oh, thank you. I like to say I'm relatively fast. I've run 2:39 in the marathon.
Nice.
Which, it's somewhat fast, but, you know, I'm clearly not, Nike is not knocking on my door for a sponsorship.
It's all relative, right?
It's fast by my standards, for sure.
Exactly.
So let's talk about strength training. I want you to lay out the case for strength training. And we've done this in the past on the podcast, but it's probably been a while. I know a lot of runners just like to run. I mean, that's why they got into it. And this other stuff seems superfluous, maybe, or time consuming, boring. What is the case for strength training?
Well, first I should say that I'm that kind of runner too. I just want to run. I don't want to spend an hour in the weight room where 3/4 of the time is just spent resting in between sets. It's just not as fun. I'd rather be out trail running or ripping some intervals on the track. Like, that's so much more fun. But, you know, we have to recognize that strength training is a critical part of training for any runner. You know, I don't even consider it cross training. I just consider it part of the training that you have to do if you really want to see what your potential might be. And so the case for strength training, you know, I really consider strength training to have 3 main benefits for runners. And I think the number one goal with strength work should be to prevent injuries. So if you're the type of runner that struggles with injuries, I think lifting weights is probably the most valuable thing that you can do in your training to stay healthy. And, you know, when we consider that the annual injury rate among runners is somewhere close to 60, 70, maybe even a little higher, depending on the source, it's a no-brainer to focus on strength training in your training so that you can stay healthy. It's going to strengthen your tendons, bones, ligaments, all your connective tissues, because, you know, at the end of the day, running is an impact sport. It's you versus the ground. Every step you take, you have 2 to 5 times your body weight in impact forces going up your leg. And, you know, runners who don't have as much strength as some other runners are just going to have higher injury rates. And, you know, I can probably speak for any runner that has been injured, that it's probably the worst time in your running career when you're sitting on the sidelines and all you want to do is go for a run with your friends or, you know, try to take another crack at that PR. So, you know, strength training, I think, from an injury prevention perspective, should be something that runners should add to their training. And it's just probably the most valuable thing to stay healthy long term. The other thing about lifting weights is that it actually makes you a more efficient runner too. It improves your running economy. And I think that's something that should be attractive to most runners, because if we can run the same effort or the same distance with a little bit less energy, that's going to make a really big difference in not only our training and how we feel on a day-to-day basis, but also how fast we race and how fast we perform. So that's really important. The other thing that I think that's really critical about strength training is that it actually does make us faster. And so here we're really getting to one of the strong benefits of strength training that I think any runner can really identify with. Look, it's going to make you a faster runner at the end of the day, because when you're lifting appropriately, then you're going to be a more powerful runner. You're going to be a stronger runner. And in addition to delaying fatigue, which I think is important, particularly in a longer race like the half or the marathon, it's going to make you faster by not only delaying fatigue, but then keeping you healthy long term. So you're missing less training time. You're going to be able to put in more mileage on a macro level. So either, you know, on a quarterly or annual basis, you're just going to run more because you're not injured as frequently. And then the strength training that you're doing is also going to allow you to recruit more muscle fibers. So, you know, let's just imagine you're half a mile from the finish line in a 5K and you want to really start running hard to finish strong at the end of this race. Strength training is going to allow you to recruit more of your muscle fibers and thereby increasing your capacity for speed at the end of a race. So, you know, any runner who wants to really find that higher gear at the end of the race to sprint as hard as they can to finish a race, strength training is one of the best ways that you can really get those benefits and become a better runner. I mean, it's going to make you more coordinated and economical. It's going to make you more athletic and less prone to injury, and then it's going to make you faster. And I think all those things are things that runners want. And if we can make a minor time investment on a weekly basis in strength training, then for those kind of benefits, then I think that is a very clear ROI on strength work.
As well said, when you were talking about power and muscle fiber, I was thinking of the way little videos I've seen about Usain Bolt and how he trained. Of course, he's a sprinter. But then I heard something, I think it was an announcer at the Olympics, you know, in Rio, and they said that he had never run a mile ever.
I think I like, read that too.
How can that be possible? Like, it just blew my mind. The fastest guy in the world has never...
race lasts less than 10 seconds if he's doing it right.
Exactly.
And with a race distance that's less than 10 seconds, it's not even anaerobic. So you really don't need any kind of aerobic capacity to run well at 100 meters. You need power and a lactic fitness, which is really, you know, the kind of energy system that you're stressing when you're sprinting as hard as you can for a very short period of time. So I'm sure a lot of runners are probably familiar with hill sprints, popularized by a coach named Brad Hudson. He used to work with Dathan Ritzenhine. And they're basically 8 to 10 second maximum intensity sprints up a steep hill. And you get a full recovery, which is kind of weird to distance runners. You know, we want to, you know, run for a minute, but this is like walking for 2 minutes. And this kind of a session, it's not aerobic, it's not anaerobic, it's lactic. It's not even long enough for you to start working anaerobically. And so I'm not too surprised that Usain Bolt has never run a mile or more. You know, I think a lot of people have talked about, you know, if you get the best miler and the best 100 meter runner in the world and pit them against each other in a 400 or a 600, what would happen? Well, I don't think Usain Bolt would be very good at a 600 or anything longer than that, because he doesn't have the aerobic and anaerobic fitness to really do that. But man, when it comes to power, straight up power, he's clearly, you know, the best. He's the greatest of all time. And, you know, in the weight room, he'd probably be able to put up a lot of weight too, because running that fast and lifting heavy weight are actually very similar.
Yeah, well, if you look at the musculature of a sprinter versus a long distance runner, you know, you can tell just the differences. You know, obviously, if you get to that level to excel, you have to have a certain body type anyway. But, you know, you can definitely tell the systems that they focus on training and probably the different ways they do strength train. So have you run across different mistakes or misunderstandings that people have when it comes to strength training? I mean, what are some of the barriers that you often hear from people why they can't strength train or they don't want to?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of misconceptions about the type of strength training that is most beneficial for runners and, you know, how they go about getting stronger. One of the big mistakes that runners make in the weight room is that they get in there and they think to themselves, you know, I'm an endurance runner, so more endurance is a good thing. So I should try to gain more endurance in the weight room. And I think it certainly sounds good, right? If you can gain endurance in two different ways, you're going to have more of it, right? but the answer is no. You know, it certainly sounds like a nice promise, but, you know, runners are already getting plenty of endurance from their running. You know, their running training is their sports-specific training. And, you know, lifting weights is really best served for other goals. And, you know, those goals really are strength and power in service of the really ultimate goal, which is speed. And so when you're lifting for endurance, you're lifting relatively low weight for a high number of repetitions. So you might do 15 to 20 reps. And if you're lifting that much volume, you obviously can't lift that much weight. It's just like if you're running a lot of mileage, you're not going to be doing all of it really quickly. You know, you have to have easy runs, recovery runs, that kind of thing. And what we really want in a lifting program is power. We want to develop the ability to recruit a lot of muscle fibers, to produce a lot of force, because that force application is really what makes you fast. One of the reasons why Usain Bolt is so fast is that every time his foot hits the ground, he is just stabbing the track with an incredible amount of force. And that's what makes him so fast. And so lifting allows us distance runners to produce more force with every step. And unfortunately, if you're lifting for endurance, you're just not getting that. You're not getting those kind of adaptations, and you're just not going to get as much out of your strength training sessions. You're going to waste a lot of time. So I think that's probably one of the common mistakes I see runners making in the weight room. Then when I look at runners who have come from other sports or who might come from even maybe a weightlifting background, they kind of go the opposite way. They lift like a bodybuilder. So you know, they're going to focus on individual muscles. They're going to do hamstring curls, quadriceps extensions, bicep curls, those kinds of exercises.
So muscle isolation more so.
Exactly. Yeah. They're going to isolate specific muscles rather than doing, compound exercises or full body workouts. They also are going to lift relatively slowly. So they're going to put the muscle under stress for a long period of time. And as runners, we don't really want or need that. You know, we need a forceful lift because we kind of want to train our muscles to react forcefully and quickly in favor of our more sport-specific goals. And then the other thing that bodybuilders do is they lift a lot. So they're in the gym 5 days a week. They have distinct days for different muscles like buys and tries day or today's leg day. And their workouts tend to be longer. You know, they're in the gym for an hour and a half, maybe up to 2 hours. And too many gym sessions for too long a time period, focusing on specific muscles, that's not how runners should do it. And I think runners can go to the gym less frequently and keep their gym workouts shorter and also more general, so they don't need to do any kind of isolation work, and they're going to get many more benefits from a strength program structured that way.
Wow, this is good. So take us into the weight room. What would be an ideal routine then, and style of lifting for a runner?
Oh man, that's the $1 million question, right? Well, I think it's important to recognize that any good strength program should be periodized. And this is kind of a nerdy exercise science term that basically means that as your program progresses throughout, from week 1 to week 8 to week 12, the focus should be different. And I think a lot of runners understand this intuitively a little bit from the training plans that they're following. So they might have some base training work in the beginning of a plan. And then as their mileage kind of peaks or builds, the intensity starts increasing. There's a taper at the end of the running plan where, they're not doing as much, but the intensity is maintained. And that helps you race faster. Your strength program should also be periodized. There should be a focus in the beginning that is more general for injury prevention purposes, for building general strength. And then you can get into more specific power-oriented lifts later on. And, this whole idea of periodization reminds me that another big mistake that runners make when they try to get strong is that, they take this kind of weird grab bag approach to strength work. And they say, this week I'm going to go to body pump. Next week I'm going to go to that CrossFit workout of the day. And, I'm just going to skip my training today. Maybe tomorrow I'll do a P90X DVD. And it's just this sampling of different types of workouts all the time. And when you do that, you might get a good workout now and then. And this kind of an approach is really great for people, I think, who are focused on general fitness, who are not trying to get faster at a given race distance. But, ultimately, at the end of the day, for runners who are trying to have a performance goal in mind, it's kind of a time waster. It's not progressive. It doesn't it's not periodized. And a lot of these kinds of lifting are very metabolic in nature. So there's a big cardiovascular component to it. I think CrossFit is a great example of this, where, they actually do lifting for time. So they try to do as many repetitions in a given period of time. They'll add in running or rowing. And, like we talked about before, running is your endurance training. That's where you get your endurance. When you're in the gym, you want strength and power. But a lot of these other, different kinds of circuits and routines like that have too much of a metabolic component to really focus on strength and power. You're going to get a good general workout, but for runners, we need to be a little bit more strategic, I think, with our strength training.
Or you may decrease your efficiency in your actual running workouts if you're killing yourself the day before with a high intensity, workout, like you said, that is not really specific towards your running goals.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, when you are doing like P90X is brutally hard. CrossFit can be brutally hard. When you're doing workouts like that that include running or rowing or as many reps as possible kind of sessions, you're going to be really tired and you're probably going to be really sore. And whenever you're in a situation where you have to modify a run or a workout because you're too sore from your lifting, then your lifting's too hard. I think it's good to understand that lifting always has to be in service of your running. It is there to supplement and make your running better. If it's detracting from your running training, then we need to revise how you're doing your strength work.
So when it comes down to like the actual reps, fewer reps are better, maybe more weights instead of just like long sets with lots of reps going on and on.
Yeah. So I think in the beginning phases of a strength program, it's good to do kind of a moderate number of reps, not super, you know, not a low number, but not a high number. And this is when the goal of your strength training is really injury prevention and general strength. It's kind of the preparatory phase that's going to get you ready for, you know, the more challenging strength training that's to come. So during that phase, yeah, I think when you're doing basic exercises, squat, deadlift, press, bench press is another great example. It's good to be somewhere like in the 8 to 10 rep range and do 2 or 3 sets. You maybe want to start with 2 and then work up to 3. And that kind of a schedule is going to build, it's going to build strength. It's also going to build neuromuscular coordination. So you're just like you get more and more economical as a runner, the more you run, the more you lift weights, the more your form is going to improve, the more you're coordinated, you're going to feel, and the better you're going to be at it. And then I think once you kind of have built a solid foundation of general strength, that's when you can add in some power exercises. So maybe some Olympic weightlifting moves like the clean or the push press. And then that can get more and more complex as you go about it. But, you know, those Olympic movements, those are really power movements. So if you go to a powerlifting meet, you're going to see squat, deadlift, bench press. And then if you go to an Olympic weightlifting meet, you're going to see other exercises like the clean and jerk and the snatch. And all those exercises require a lot of power. You're moving weight really quickly, and you're trying to do it while maintaining really good form. Very challenging, but, you know, a strength coach that works with some elite runners up here in Boulder, Colorado, that I've worked with to develop some of this programming, you know, he said strength training is really coordination training under resistance. And I think that's such an awesome way to think about it. You are becoming a more coordinated athletic athlete by lifting weights. And that's only going to help your running.
What about like functional strength training? I did some Spartan races last year. So the first Spartan race I did was kind of on a whim, and I realized how much I needed to work on climbing ropes, carrying buckets of rocks and monkey bars and that kind of a lot of grip strength.
Angie needs to give you some more chores around the house.
I know. I'm already thinking.
Don't give her any ideas.
She needs to be mowing the lawn by hand.
Yeah, you need a push wheel.
And some folks in our listening audience have gotten into obstacle racing, so they're interested in working on their functional strength.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of two issues here. I think first, I might challenge you a little bit, Trevor, in that a squat, a deadlift, a press are incredibly functional, and you're doing functional training when you're doing Olympic weightlifting in the gym. But the kind of functional training that I think you're talking about is more like the obstacle course race specific stuff that you're going to experience out on the course.
More like skills.
Climbing ropes. Yeah, jumping over things, carrying heavy things, maybe even throwing a spear. I think they do that in Spartan races. So those kinds of activities I would actually call race specific activities. So if you are an obstacle course athlete, I would include a little bit of that in your training. You know, I think that's more like the icing on the cake. And, you know, you're the athletes who are doing the best in these obstacle course races are first and foremost fast runners. Because I think the runners who are able to run really fast in between the obstacles and then maybe take an extra 5 or 10 seconds on the obstacle, those are the athletes that are going to be better at OCRs just because, you know, they have more of the more race specific fitness to get them across the finish line. Yeah. But yeah, you know, if you're just a person doing road races, half marathon, marathon, maybe even shorter races like 5K, 10K, I think some of that more functional slash, I'll call it like playground fitness that I like to do with my little kids. I think it's still helpful as a form of general athleticism training. And one of the things that I've found is that a lot of runners, recreational runners, particularly those who start later in life, who don't have a sports background, they need more of that general athleticism, the ability to pick something heavy up and put it back down without hurting themselves. Someone who can climb up a rope or do some skips and sprints, you know, just general things that I think any good athlete can do, not just a good runner, but a good athlete. those things are going to translate to making you more economical, a stronger runner. So I think general athleticism is really helpful for most runners.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think, you know, we all want to improve our running, but the bottom line is we want to be strong and healthy in our daily lives as well. And if you have that core strength, then there's less chance you're going to throw out your lower back just by picking up your kid or whatever it is. So,
because that can really mess up your marathon training.
Yeah.
Throw your back out.
Yeah, absolutely. That just happened to Ian Sharman, who's the Leadville 100, like four-time winner. He threw out his back because of a dog incident. So
I saw that.
I'm not saying that, you know, a four-time Leadville winner does not have a strong core, but
yeah, stuff happens.
Right. He's a hardcore dude. I mean, we've had him on the show a couple times, and he I saw that post on Instagram. I didn't know if he was attacked by a dog or fell getting away. Do you know what happened?
I haven't talked to him about it, but apparently there was an off-leash dog out on the trail when he was running, and I don't know exactly what happened. I think he might have been pulled and was jerked a little bit, and that tweaked his back. Hmm. But apparently it's not super serious. He'll be back running soon.
Yeah. Well, as someone who's tripped over a dog before, I yeah, it's no fun.
That's right. You tripped over a dog.
Yes.
It's one you don't hear very often.
I don't know who was more disgruntled, the dog or me.
Yeah, that's the other great thing I love about strength training is that it's going to give you more wiggle room, both in your training and in your life, for dumb mistakes. Mm-hmm. So when you trip over a dog, or when my daughter jumps on my back when I'm not ready for it, it's just going to make you more resilient. It's going to make you a stronger person who's able to withstand those kinds of just oops moments in your life. And then also the kind of oops training mistakes that you make on a daily basis. Like you get lost and you end up running 15 miles when you're only supposed to run 12 miles. Or you're with a group and they go 30 seconds faster a mile than you really should be running, but you stuck with them anyway, mm-hmm. even though you knew you weren't supposed to run that fast. So strength training can give you a little bit of wiggle room to make more of those mistakes and not suffer the consequences of getting injured or just feeling incredibly fatigued from it too.
Well, we'd just like to take a quick moment and thank our episode sponsor, Spartan Race. With over 60 races around the country, Spartan is an obstacle course racing company with races for every athletic ability and skill level. I've done 3 Spartan races now. They're a lot of fun. I'll tell you what, there's all shapes and sizes of people that go there. And the good news is if you are a runner and have experience doing half marathons, marathons, I think you have an advantage when you go into a Spartan race. You have great conditioning, and a lot of people find the running the most miserable part of the Spartan race. That was the easy part for me. I had to work on a lot of strength stuff when I was preparing for mine. So starting with the 3-mile sprint and going all the way up to the 12-mile beast, any racer can find what's right for them. Of course, there are lots of obstacles, but with grit and determination, you can do it. To sign up for the best weekend meeting of your life and race alongside a community of 50 million, visit Spartan.com/marathon for an exclusive offer and to find a race near you. That's Spartan.com/marathon.
We'd also like to thank Health IQ for sponsoring this episode. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like runners. Health IQ can save customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive.
So like you can save money on car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ will save you money on life insurance if you live a health conscious lifestyle. They let you qualify by taking one of their world famous quizzes or uploading screenshots from fitness tracking apps like Strava, Runkeeper, Nike, Garmin, MapMyRun.
So to see if you qualify and to learn more, get a free quote on life insurance by visiting healthiq.com/MTA. That's healthiq.com/MTA.
So for a person who doesn't have a gym membership and maybe they feel super intimidated by like the whole weight room scene and they prefer to work out at home, what are some good tools that they can have in their own home that are going to help them gain that power and that strength and, you know, help them maximize their time availability too? Because it's a lot easier to just like slip into your basement for a 20-minute workout than it is to like drive to a gym in some cases.
Yeah, for sure. And you can certainly get some pretty affordable tools to keep at home to get in a really good strength session. You can get everything from an exercise band to put around your legs just to add a little bit of extra resistance. And that might be good for people who are new to strength training. And then you can kind of go up the ladder of complexity, and then you can get a medicine ball. Medicine balls are really great, what I would consider extremely functional, because you can do them for almost any kind of exercise. Then you could maybe even get some dumbbells, and dumbbells are incredibly versatile. You can use them for pretty much any exercise there are. And then from there, you know, you can outfit a whole gym with, you know, a squat rack and a bench and bars and a variety of plates. So yeah, I think there's a really good opportunity to do some awesome strength training at home. But we should also recognize the fact that if we are trying to increase force application, so we're trying to make our strength training make us faster runners, we do have to lift heavier weight. So we're going to need to go beyond a medicine ball or exercise bands or dumbbells and really get a bar with some weight. So, you know, I like to say that body weight strength training and med ball work, that kind of stuff, that stuff is great, but lifting in the gym is ideal.
That's good. So if a person's, you know, new to lifting in a gym, do you recommend that they, you know, get some kind of help from a strength coach? Because I know form is a really big deal. You know, if you're doing something with incorrect form, you can actually hurt yourself as opposed to help yourself.
Yeah, it's really important to have good form. And so whatever you can do to ensure that your form is as good as it can be, I think that's a very good thing, both from an injury prevention perspective, but also as from a performance optimization perspective. You know, you're going to lift more and feel better doing it with good form. So whether that is talking with a strength coach, getting really good instruction, you know, there's online videos now for pretty much any exercise that you want to do. And then also it kind of goes beyond that too, with let's just be more cautious and conservative with what we're doing in the gym. Just like if you were new to running, you would not go out for an 18-mile long run on your second day out for a run. Let's not try to max out on the squat the first day or even the 10th day that you're in the gym.
Because if you value walking the next few days or sitting.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, runners, I think, are really familiar with going slower with their training, with their running, and building up gradually and progressively. But then for some reason, like, that exercise science principle just flies out the window when we get in the gym. And, you know, I've been guilty of this myself where, you know, you're just feeling good and you just want to throw around some weight and God, it feels good. But at the same time, we have to be really careful and making sure that your form is good, making sure that you're lifting a little bit less than you think you should lift so that you can then lift again later is a helpful mindset to have about lifting. And that's going to make us better lifters. It's going to make us safer lifters too.
Someone suggested the other day to videotape or record yourself lifting so you can actually look back and see your form if you're trying to make improvements, you know, increase your weight. Because, you know, sometimes you think you're doing one thing and then someone points out you're not, and or, you know, looking back on it on video, you're like, whoa, I didn't realize I was doing that, you know.
It reminds me of those, there's a meme about runners where it's like six pictures of, you know, how I think about myself when I'm running and how I really look when I'm running, or how my parents think about me as a runner. And they're all totally different. Of course, you think of yourself as this Olympic athlete, you know, sprinting to the finish on the track. And then how you really look is, you know, you're falling over to the side and you're running an 18-minute mile and, you know, all these things. So yes, I completely agree. Your inner perception of how you might be lifting might be completely different from how you're actually lifting. So it's good to have an objective way of looking at your form. And video is great. If you have a lifting partner, someone who you can go to the gym with, that can be really helpful too. But I think everyone has a smartphone these days and you can take a quick video and see any deficiencies in your form that you might have. It's a good place to start if you're starting to feel like a little niggle or a certain movement hurts. Lifting shouldn't hurt. So, you know, if you are getting a little bit of that, then it's a good idea to maybe film yourself and see what's going on with your form.
So can you give us an example of like what you do in a given week when it comes to strength training?
Sure. I'll just give you an example workout. Full disclosure, I've been a little bit lax with my strength training. Like I mentioned, I'd rather be out running. But
I hear you.
The struggle is real.
I think a good workout, and this is a basic one I was doing a little bit while back, and this is what I would consider kind of like lifting as base training. So I was in the gym doing three main exercises, the squat, the deadlift, and the press. And I was varying those three exercises with, a standard squat and a front squat. The deadlift was a straight leg Romanian deadlift and then just a standard deadlift. And then the press was a standard press with a bar. And then I was doing one arm presses with a kettlebell. So those were the main exercises that I was doing. And then once I was done with those, I was doing some more runner specific body weight strength work that I think is helpful for general injury prevention that you can do, things like bridges and side planks and things like that are very helpful. So that's the general structure of a workout that I was doing. In terms of reps, let's see, I think I started with 8 and then got up to 10. And then the weight is all relative. Mm-hmm. And I'm a 129 pounds soaking wet. So the weight I'm putting up is probably not going to be too impressive for anybody.
Yeah. Like you said, you kind of have to focus on what your goals are and your specific body frame and stuff like that. Do you recommend like isolating one side versus the other, like doing single leg squats or things like that? Because I know some runners, a lot of us actually have strength imbalances from one side to the other. Often your dominant side is stronger, or you've got tightness or something on the other side. What are your thoughts on that?
I do think that's a great idea. I think it's really helpful to know that no runner is perfectly symmetrical. We all have asymmetries. I've gotten a lot of questions recently with everyone having a GPS watch. They look at their the percentage of time that they spend on their right foot and their left foot, and it's never equal. It's never 50-50, and runners start freaking out. But it's okay. I think only 20% of runners, spend an equal amount of time on each foot. So once we understand that we're not symmetrical, that we all have little idiosyncrasies in our form, then we don't have to go to such enormous lengths to fix these asymmetries. But with that said, single leg strength training is really, really running specific, because that's what running is. It's basically a highly coordinated series of one-legged hops. That's what you're doing when you're running. And when we can get strong on one leg, so maybe that's pistol squats. There's a lot of bodyweight exercises that you can do with just one leg. One leg bridges, for example. And then you can even modify standard exercises, like even just the squat. You can do a normal squat, but then as you're coming up, you can lift one leg up so that more your body weight is being supported by just one leg. So adding a little bit of single leg work to any strength program is something that I would definitely recommend, because it's not only specific to the sport of running, and I think it's going to make you stronger, but it's also a really, really great injury prevention measure, because it's ensuring that you're not reinforcing any of those asymmetries that you might have.
That's good. So do you rest in between strength training days?
Yeah, I think it's helpful to know that you don't have to be in the gym very much as a runner. You can get in the gym twice a week, and that's all you need.
That's good.
And so, that can be Tuesday, Friday, Monday, Thursday, anything that's, I would say, more evenly spaced throughout the week, just like you would space out your faster workout and your long run and not put those on back-to-back days. Typically, you would want to do that with your strength training too. So at least a day in between, preferably two. And I think that's a really good schedule for runners.
We actually got a question similar to that from someone in our community. I thought I would throw in here. Ken asks, I just started training for my first half marathon. I'm 46 years old and have been running consistently for about a year. I've been doing some strength training during the past year, but mostly upper body. He says, since starting the half marathon training program, I've now incorporated 2 full body strength days, mostly body weight resistance, to go with the 3 running days. I am noticing that my legs feel heavy during my runs and my times are slightly slower. He asked, should I expect this until my legs get stronger and more used to the strength days, or should I rework my strength training schedule? So he's kind of, it looks, sounds like grappling with what to do and when to do it, you know, and kind of get the most bang for his buck.
Yeah, and then he feels like he's seeing his running suffer because after a strength day, he tries to go out and run and then his legs feel like lead.
Yeah, that's not something you want with your strength training.
Yeah.
Strength training should never really detract from your running. So I think if, you know, for this runner, this is a great question. I think we can talk about, you know, some fixes for the fatigue and then optimal scheduling. So maybe we'll start with scheduling. I think it's always good to schedule things in a way that polarize your training. So we're going to make your hard days hard, but then we're going to make your easy days really easy. And doing this really helps you prioritize recovery on those easy days, and it helps you gain as much fitness as possible on those hard days. So if this runner is lifting and then trying to like do a fast workout or a long run the following day, that might be the most advanced way of doing strength training that you can possibly do. I know some elite runners do it that way because it increases muscle tension and then it can, you know, have a little bit more pop in their stride when they're doing a faster workout the following day. But elite runners are kind of genetic freaks. They are born with tools that us mere mortals simply don't have. So it's not something that I would recommend for most runners. So if this runner is doing strength training before a quality run day, that's, I think, mistake number one. Let's instead put your lifting after your hard running. And that's a nice way of scheduling things so that you are going to get pretty sore and tired on those days. But following that, you either have a complete day off or a very short, easy run. And that's the way of structuring your training for maximum fitness, maximum recovery. The other thing that I would say is, you know, you're definitely going to feel something. You know, I had my first coach ever told me that, you know, if you're a runner, you're always going to feel something. You're never just going to feel like a sedentary person. So that's something I've always remembered throughout my years
of
running.
I love that.
Yeah, it was a little bit disheartening when I first heard it. I was like, oh, because this is when I felt like I'd been run over by a truck over after that failed 3-mile run. It's like, oh, I can't feel like this forever. But it does get a lot better. So if this runner is a little bit sore, then I would say, okay, well, there's no big deal about that. You know, a little bit of soreness is fine. It means that you stressed your body to a point that is now, you know, it's going to spur more adaptations and you're going to get stronger. So that's a good thing. But if it's so sore that, you know, you might be too sore to run, or you're too sore to finish a long run, or your workout paces are really suffering, then it might be a situation where let's make sure that we're lifting appropriately too. So, you know, just like we talked about a lot of mistakes earlier, you know, is he in the gym for, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours? Is he doing isolation exercises 5 days a week? You know, these are some of the, so if we can eliminate mistakes and then schedule appropriate strength training, then I don't think these kinds of problems will happen as frequently.
Yeah, that's great advice. I know I often will, like you said, do like my speed workout usually earlier in the week, and then I'll do lower body strength training later because I know I want to give myself plenty of time before my long run, you know, if there's any residual soreness that I can have a quality long run on the weekend. So I think that's a really smart suggestion, like you said, is make your easy days easy and your hard days hard.
Right. And you don't necessarily have to put your lifting session after a workout or a long run. You know, you could do your workout on Tuesday, your lifting session on Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday can be mostly easy before your long run on Saturday. So there's a quick example schedule that works really well, but does break the kind of principle of putting your lifting session on a hard running day, but still works just great.
Awesome. We got a couple questions about glutes, and we have been hearing a lot more just kind of in the general running world about how important glute strength is. Sarah asks, she says, I'm training for my first marathon in October. As someone who is completely new to this level of running, do you have suggestions on what to incorporate into my training plan to help strengthen me aside from just running? She says, so far, my biggest pain in the butt literally is my glutes, which start getting tight and feeling like they might cramp, which gives me anxiety of how I'll ever be able to complete 26.2 without trying to resolve that pain. So
that's certainly a pain in the butt. Yeah, it's good to know that the glutes are one of the biggest muscles in the body. They're also the main driver of your stride. They give you the most power. They also stabilize in conjunction with your hips, your entire stride, so that, you know, if you have weak glutes, your hips are going to take over. Most of us, just because of the fact that we sit down for most of the day, have weak hips and glutes. And when we're then trying to be good runners, which require strong hips and glutes, we're in a tough situation. So strengthening those muscles is really important, not just for performance, but also for injury prevention. So the exercises that are really great for hips and glutes are, there's a routine that I put together. I had an IT band injury for 6 months a long time ago, and it was really brutal. And I put together a routine I call the ITB rehab routine, even though I should have called it something different. It's really a hip and glute routine. This is a routine that you do exercises like glute bridges. You do, you know, kind of like the basketball defense drill with a TheraBand around your ankles. That's really great for strengthening the hips. Pistol squats, clamshells, side leg raises. These are all really great exercises for those specific muscles. But those are bodyweight exercises. Now, if we're in the gym, the classics are the best. Deadlifts and squats are two of the best exercises for strengthening the glutes and the hips too. You know, when we talk about the glutes, I really kind of, I always think glutes and hips in conjunction with each other, because they're the two most important muscles for runners, and they're the two that typically have the most dysfunction in runners, unfortunately, because of our modern sedentary lifestyle. So if we can do those exercises on a regular basis, if we can strengthen those muscles and potentially try to limit the amount of sitting that we do on a daily basis, that's another really nice strategy for, you know, not stretching out our glutes in that position all day long. That's going to be helpful too.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, sometimes it's not what you're doing in training, it's what you're doing outside of training that could be the problem, whether it's a footwear issue or, yeah, like you said, sitting too much, not moving around enough during the day. So yeah, that's very helpful. And sometimes you find that if the glutes aren't firing correctly, that people, runners' hamstrings tend to take over, and then you get those hamstring strains and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. There's always compensations when one muscle isn't doing its job, which is really an awesome thing. Like when you think of the human body, it has all of these built-in redundancies that is just incredible.
It wants to get the job done.
The thing is, though, yeah, those redundancies aren't as effective as, you know, the main system for accomplishing whatever task you're trying to do. So, you know, if your glutes aren't firing properly, if they're too weak, if you have some sort of imbalance, your hamstrings are definitely going to take over. So this is actually the issue that I struggle with, even though I do a lot of these exercises and I'm in the gym. You know, my particular biomechanics predispose me to, you know, IT band syndrome because of a weak and somewhat dysfunctional left weak hip and glute. So that's something that I struggle with. But, you know, if you're really proactive and on top of it, then you'll be able to keep running and to run a lot and run fast.
Well, it's cool that you know that about yourself. Yeah. I don't think I know myself that well.
I think knowledge is half the battle, because then you know what to work on. Sometimes people, you know, they have like these general things, like something's not right here. I don't know exactly what it is. And maybe that's when it's a good idea to, you know, have a session with a physical therapist or, you know, some kind of form expert, so they can kind of really maybe break down what could be the problem so you can work on that. And
yeah, how did you figure that out about yourself?
Well, it was a long, costly, and grueling experience. It was after my first marathon in 2008, where when I was coming back to normal training after the race, that's when I got that IT band injury, where, you know, I was on the couch for 6 months, like watching reruns of House. It was not pretty.
At least you have good taste in TV.
Yeah. And so I saw four PTs. I did more research about the injury than I really wanted to. And that's kind of what put me on the path to discovering that, you know, my left hip doesn't do its job. My left glute is weak. And through a lot of rehab and work and really listening to my body and focusing on the signals that it was sending me, I was able to figure out that that was really the problem. But it's not an easy process, that's for sure.
Well, if people want to find out more about you, Jason, where should they go?
Oh, well, thanks so much. The best place is strengthrunning.com. That's where we have our own podcast and blog, video series that we put out. So that's really my home base for all the running material that I publish. And if folks are like more interested in strength training, we have more resources on strength work at strengthrunning.com/strength. So I think we kept it pretty simple there. And thanks so much for chatting with me about this topic. It's something I'm really passionate about because I think it's something that runners don't pay enough attention to, but it has such an extraordinary potential to make you more injury resilient and faster. And that's just such a huge, huge benefit.
Well, thanks for sharing your knowledge and expertise. We'll be sure to link to all those places, folks, over at our website. So, Jason, glad to finally have you on the podcast, and keep up the great work.
Well, thank you, Trevor and Angie. This is great.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jason Fitzgerald. You know, Angie, I've done marathons where I implemented strength training beforehand, and then I've done some where I kind of neglected it. You can definitely feel the difference if you just wing it, you know, versus getting to the starting line feeling strong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes a big difference in your recovery as well. I notice that usually I'm a lot less sore afterward if I've been doing regular strength training, because your muscles have been tested and they bounce back a lot faster.
And you actually enjoy it. Like, I'm not at a level yet where I enjoy hitting the weights. I think I'm just too impatient, you know, like it's my ADD or something, my adult ADD. I don't know what it is, but you actually love lifting weights, don't you?
I do. And in fact, that's one of the things I'm missing this summer. You know, since we've been traveling, I haven't been able to lift weights, and I've been doing some body weight resistance type things, but I still kind of feel that lack. I feel like, oh, I'm not really pushing myself. I feel like I'm getting soft.
Yes, I wouldn't let her load our camper full of dumbbells to bring on the road.
I know.
Can't add any more weight to our gas mileage is already bad enough.
Yeah.
And by the way, folks, if you're interested in learning how to use weightlifting for gaining strength and power in your running, Jason has a great program called High Performance Lifting. It's an in-depth program to show you how to do strength training using weights. And there are four phases that he works people through, and everything is demonstrated on video by professional runners. It's really cool. Just go to marathontrainingacademy.com/strength to get enrolled in the program. Find out what it costs. Once again, it's called High Performance Lifting. And you can check it out when you go to marathontrainingacademy.com/strength. Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip. We're going to talk about sunglasses.
Yeah, we got a great question in the Academy from Kristen. And she says, hi there, love the podcast. Would you be able to recommend any type of sunglasses that work well for running? I've been looking to get a pair and not sure where to start. And I personally don't wear sunglasses while running. I always wear a hat or, you know, visor. So we kind of just reached out to some of our great Academy members who have a lot of knowledge and experience in all things running and gear. And so I thought we would just kind of read some of the suggestions that we got from people.
Yeah, so we haven't personally tried these, but these are sunglasses that other folks really love. So what do you got for us?
Yeah, that's right. Emily recommended the brand Roka. She says they're stylish and highly functional. I have two styles. My husband uses his pair for everyday outdoor activities in addition to running. So that one is Roka. Tom says that he wears Spy Optics. He says they're somewhere in the range of $40 to $60 because I can't stand spending more on sunglasses. So that was Spy Optics. Marty says, I wear prescription glasses and mine are Ray-Ban Wayfarers. I'm guessing a little more pricey, but worth it, I'm sure. He says, when I have races or long runs that start before the sun is out, they ride on top of my head nicely without me worrying about losing them. So that's a nice feature. And then overwhelmingly, I mean, like a dozen people literally recommended the brand Goodr. That's G-O-O-D-R. And I had never heard of them before. Melissa said, I didn't even know I needed and wanted running sunglasses until I received these as a gift. They're super lightweight and come in fun colors, and they run only around $25. So, you know, it sounds like if you're just kind of on the fence about them, it's not a huge investment. But yeah, just many, many people said Goodr was their go-to running sunglasses of choice.
All right, so there's a few recommendations for you guys on sunglasses for runners. Of course, you should do something. You don't want to be out there just getting your eyes baked by the sun, and your head for that matter. I mean, you got to cover up. It's just smart.
And wear sunscreen. So yeah, make sure you're smart in the sun. Take care of your eyes and your skin, and be smart about it, because yeah, we don't want people damaging themselves permanently.
No. You know, my grandpa got skin cancer, you know, it was melanoma, probably too much time in the sun, and got it on his head back before people knew better and were not using sunscreen or anything. So maybe it's just ingrained in me to wear a hat, you know, outside in the sun. Maybe I'm just a wimp. I don't know. But why do so many people run without anything?
Yeah, I don't know either. For me, I have to wear a hat or have something shading my eyes and face.
So that is the quick tip for you guys. Thanks again to Honest for sponsoring this episode. With great tasting, healthy, USDA organic beverages, Honest offers both a refreshingly transparent product and outlook. Visit Honest Tea, that's Honest in the word tea, TEA.com/podcast today. Honest Tea, live actively, replenish organically. Before we wrap up, just a reminder that we will be at the Juneau Marathon in Juneau, Alaska on July 28th. So if you're going to be at that race, send us an email. Give us a heads up. We'd like to hear from you. Of course, we'll always love hearing from you no matter what your questions are. We have a contact form on our website if you want to send us a question. And if you are going to be ramping up for a marathon this fall and looking at hiring a running coach, we do have some coaching spots open, and they go on a first-come, first-served basis. So you can learn about that at marathontrainingacademy.com. Until next time, train strong, and remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way. Oh, yeah.